Welcome to Blondie and the Brit, Writing, Publishing, and Beyond. You can find our show notes and more information about our podcast at blondieandbrit.com. That's BLONDIEANDBRIT.com. Welcome to Blondie and the Brit podcast. I am Blondie, KJ Waters.
And I'm Suzanne Cowman. I'm the Brit.
And together we're Blondie and the Brit.
Yay!
Woohoo! I am the author of Stealing Time.
And I'm the author of The Rejected Writers Book Club.
Welcome to Blondie and the Brit. Today we have Graham Ng. He is a writer of speculative fiction, fantasy, science fiction, paranormal, cyberpunk, and steampunk. He's written three books, Twisted Earths, Ocean of Dust, and his latest, Necromancer, are all available on Amazon and most retailers. Born in England, Graham now lives in San Diego, California. His career as a software engineer and development manager spans 30 years, including the development of a dozen computer games for consoles, home computers, and online. Welcome, Graham.
Hey, KJ. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi, Graham.
Great that you're here. We're very excited to have you because you know a lot of things that we don't.
And
you do, because you and I had a conversation about Scrivener, but I'm very excited to learn a little bit more. It sounds like you have this thing figured out, at least to the point where you can be really functional in there. So we'll get to that in a minute. But first, I need to know where you are from in England.
I am from the Oxford area originally.
Oh, lovely. And Suzanne, you are from...
I'm from Birmingham, but Oxford is beautiful, KJ.
Well, I bet it is, and it's also where all the smart people are. Is that true, Graham?
That's right.
So I've heard. I don't know if I fit into that category.
All right. Well, how did you end up in California from England, Oxford?
Well, I don't know if you've been to England, KJ, but it's cold and wet most of the time.
True. So. It was in the summer when I was there. They're like, this is warm. I'm like, dude, I got all my clothes on. It's not warm.
It can get warm, but mostly it's cold and wet, and yeah. California is completely different.
That is true. So you moved for the weather, or was this a job type thing?
It was both. I wanted a change of weather, I wanted a change of scenery, and I got a really good job offer with Sony at the time, and so I just flew out to San Diego.
That sounds like a good deal, and San Diego has perfect weather. Isn't it like 70 every day?
It's like the perfect microclimate. It's pretty much always sunny and always warm.
Nice. I have a little meme I put up not too long ago. It's like, it's winter in California, and it's a picture of a guy with socks on and his sandals.
I once took a picture on Christmas Day sitting in the sun in the garden, and it upset my folks' ankles.
All right, so tell us, you work for Sony, and you used to develop games. Do any of the games that you worked on, have they inspired some of the books that you write? I'm reading Necromancer right now, and I could totally picture that in a game setting.
I think it would be cool as a game setting, but no, I try to keep the games away from the books, mainly because I have so many of my own ideas.
Yeah.
I don't really need to be inspired by the games we do.
That makes sense. Have you worked on any that are kind of in the same genre? You have a very wide range of genre that you've written. Are some of those in that kind of setting that at least gets you in that mood?
Oh, totally. I mean, one of the major games I worked on was EverQuest, which is a very large online fantasy game. And so, you know, it's everything you can expect from fantasy in that game. You know, there's dragons, there's sorcerers, there's... you know, warriors running around. So, you know, it's definitely in my wheelhouse, but I haven't, like, stolen anything.
That makes sense. Now, I am reading Necromancer, and it's really well written. You are a great writer. I was hoping that you could give our listeners an overview of that story.
Okay, well, thank you for saying that.
That's true.
I've been getting some good reactions to it, which is totally thrilling me. When I came about to start Necromancer was, most people, when they think of an necromancer, they think of this, you know, ancient old man with a beard kind of crouching in the dark shadows of a dungeon summoning the dead. You know, it's a very, to me, it's an image that most people have. So I wanted to turn that on its head. So my premise going into that book was, what if the necromancer is the good guy? What if he's a young guy, he's a good guy, he's a hero? And then I just wanted to get as many spells and icky creatures and a bleak setting. I love the city that I have it set against.
Yeah,
it's very kind of bleak and Dickensian. And I just wanted to get the feeling of the darkness without it actually being a very dark book.
Yeah, no, you've done a great job with that. The one scene that comes to mind as you're saying all that is when he's going down in the tunnels and he gets kind of duped and there's this giant scorpion-like creature that he has to fight. Really, I could just see every bit. You're so good at describing the detail and setting that tone. Like, how do you become a writer from doing all the software stuff? Have you been writing for a long time, or is this just something you've always wanted to do?
So I've been writing pretty much since I was a kid. In fact, I have this memory of, I don't know, I must have been like 8 or 9, typing away on my mum's little manual typewriter.
Wow.
Probably churning out the most glorious drivel, right, that a 9-year-old
can. Glorious drivel.
I remember trying to write screenplays and everything. But so I've been writing pretty much all my life on and off. But it's really not till I hit my 40s that I decided, you know, I really should do something with this.
Wow. Was it something that inspired you at 40? Or was it just, had it been kind of brewing and then you suddenly went for it? How did that happen?
No, that's a great question. I don't know if there was any kind of moment that it happened, but it, you know, being an author is something I always wanted to do, and I think probably the incident that made me want to write seriously was the idea I had for my first book, Ocean of Dust, and I think that made me suddenly decide, hey, you know, get serious, write this.
And how did you get the idea?
It kind of came together from several other ideas. It's been brewing for a while, but then I just suddenly got the character, the heroine, Lissa. I just suddenly, I guess I kind of woke up one day and there she was talking to me, and I'm like, okay, now I've got to write this character because I love that character. She's great.
That is cool. I love that. Now, when you created the world for Oceans of Dust and Necromancer, your other books, do you use Kindle Worlds or anything along those lines to kind of set it all out before you start writing? Or do you just, it just comes as you start writing the story?
A lot of it comes as I'm writing, but I do actually, world building is one of my most favorite things. I've always been fascinated by maps.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love to world build. So I'll do a lot of design of the world before I even start writing. You know, I'll design the culture, I'll decide what the religions are, if there are any, what the geography is like, what type of races are in there. And that then generates ideas that are going to be in the book. So it's kind of a self-propelling thing that I go through.
Well, that makes a lot of sense.
I love that creative process. I love that you create whole one. I have total admiration for anyone that does that, because whenever you're doing this kind of genre, you have to create a world that's believable. I know that's the first thing you have to do. And so that's incredible, Graham. I'd love to kind of sit next to you and see you do that. That would be really fun.
I really enjoy doing it. So for me, it's just natural. I just love to build worlds and just make them, every world, different.
Well, and you've done a great job with it. How do you do that? Is that something like, I know you got the computer skills. Do you create it on the computer or do you hand draw it out?
Mostly I do it on paper.
Yeah.
I'll scroll notes, I'll draw maps because I love maps.
That is cool.
I don't, you know, I do that all on paper until, you know, eventually I take it into Scrivener.
So, Graham, tell us, what is Scrivener? First of all, let our listeners get the big overview of that for people that don't know. And then tell us how you use it for this purpose.
So Scrivener, it's kind of an awkward thing to describe. Authors seem to love or hate it. You'll find probably as many people don't like Scrivener as like it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a piece of software put out by an English company, actually, Literature and Latte.
Oh.
And it's intended to be a soup-to-nut solution. So basically, it'll provide a very flexible sandbox for you to go all the way from building your outline, through writing the book, through editing the book, and in fact, it will also format. So it will help you format for paperback, Mobi, EPUB, the whole thing.
That is amazing. Yeah, you were about that before, and just that alone makes me want to use it. But I think there's a pretty big learning curve, isn't there, to figure out how to...
I was going to say, that was my point. I actually don't like Scrivener for that reason, the learning curve. I mean, I know that if I could just get through that learning curve, I'd probably love it. Because it seems like it's a good program. It's just a lot to learn in it.
Yeah.
There's a huge amount to learn. You can get by with, you know, 10% of what there is in there, but the more you start learning about it, the more it helps you out. There's actually quite a few video courses online to teach you Scrivener. It is complicated, that's true.
Yeah.
And that's why some authors don't like it.
You know, I'm seeing a pattern here. Like, you spend all this time writing the, creating the worlds and the religions and all that stuff, and you spend all this time learning Scrivener and all that. I think I'm a, I'm ready for it now kind of a person. I think it's impatience that's keeping me from A, writing fantasy, and B, learn, you know, spending the time to learn. I want to get my book out. I want to finish writing. I want blah, blah, blah. Like, the, when you're talking about, you know, you create all this stuff, I'm thinking, oh my God, that would drive me nuts.
So maybe are you a pantser?
I'm a pantser.
Me too, I'm a pantser.
I think that's the key right there.
And it sounds like you're a plotter, right, Graham?
I am totally a plotter, so that does make sense, yeah.
There you go. I've analyzed it. And
the problem with having pantsers is we write it, and then we have to go back and try and figure out how do I make it fit, you know?
The thing about writing, though, is whatever works for you, that's all that matters, right?
Yeah. So tell us, with Scrivener, what tools are there to create these worlds?
So they don't actually go as far as giving you, you know, tools to do that, because they want to make it flexible. They want to keep it so that you can do things the way you want to do it. So they just give you kind of the ability to organize. One of the things I love most about Scrivener is everything you do is in one file. So your book is in that file. All your research notes are in that same file. I like to put a lot of pictures in my research folder so that it can inspire me. For example, every one of my character sheets that I make has a picture that I've kind of pulled that I think looks like that character. Mm-hmm. So it inspires me when I'm writing them. Pull in web links. You can just pull in whole articles and you store it all in the research folder. And then there's also your manuscript in there. Another really cool thing about Scrivener is, if imagine you're using Microsoft Word and you decide you want to move a scene around. Let's say you've got a conversation and you decide, hey, I want that in an earlier scene. You have to cut it and you have to scroll up to the other scene and you have to paste it in.
Right.
In Scrivener, if you've divided it up into scenes well, you literally drag and drop one little thing in the list of scenes and it's literally half a second that you're done.
It's like it's organized in such an intuitive way so that you can move it around. And you were telling me, too, like you can set it up so that it almost has like index cards of each scene. So you have just a very quick synopsis. So you can kind of go in and shuffle things around. And
yeah, that's a great way to do the outlining. You can either, you know, right at the beginning, you can kind of lay out your scenes either in a linear list, you know, with a tiny little synopsis, or you can go to the corkboard view, which is like a load of virtual index cards, and you can shuffle them around. Because I know some people do that on paper like that.
We've talked about this several different times, but like right now I have this 4-foot by 3-foot giant post-it sticky note, which is great. It's great. It's been very helpful, but I can't take it to Starbucks. I can't, you know
what I do though, KJ, with mine? I photograph it on my iPad and take the picture with me.
Yeah. I have an iPhone and I'm like, well, I can't read anything. It's ridiculous. But yeah, I should put it on my my other.
It just, because the post-it note is just for the process. It's just to get it out of your brain onto something that you can actually see it visually in front of you.
Right.
And so, you know, you don't have to take the huge thing with you because, you know, Starbucks might be a bit scared.
It's a little bit disturbing to walk around with this thing.
When you start putting things up on their wall.
Sure, that would be really interesting.
Interesting information about Scrivener, though, you know, and I think that it would be great, KG. I don't know, are there links to some of the videos you were talking about, Graham, for if people are interested in seeing some tutorials on that? Is there ways that we can link that for our listeners?
Yeah, I could probably find you some links for sure.
That'd be fabulous. And we can put it in your, we'll put it on our website, in your show notes.
Great.
Yeah, I'm excited. Every time I talk to you about it, I'm like, okay, I'm just going to go do it, you know, and put all the stuff, because right now I'm shuffling back and forth. I have character outlines. I have one that's by character, everything that happens to them in order. And then I have a completely separate one that is everything that happens in order of the storyline. And it's so annoying to have to go back and forth between these things and to make sure they're the same. Sometimes I'll get a new idea. With Scrivener, you don't have to do any of that. It's all in one place and you can shuffle it in 20 different ways. Is that true?
Oh, yeah. And the other thing that would help you with that is that you can put keywords, you know, tags and metadata against every scene. So you could tag every scene with which character it is, where they are, which time period they're in your case. And then later you could just go up onto the search box and just go, show me all the scenes that have, you know, Sarah in the 15th century or whatever.
Right.
And then it would show you the list of all those scenes.
Oh my gosh. But you have to be organized as you're putting it in. But in between books, I'm going to have to just go in there and figure this out, because I think that my brain is working the way that they would have that set up. It's just the
learning curve.
The time spent. Yeah. And didn't you get get it like a paid course that you did to learn all these extra things it does? Is that true?
I did. I'll give you a link for that. There's definitely one guy who's like the expert, and you have to pay for his courses, but he definitely explains Scrivener in really easy way.
Yeah, yeah. So if, I think if you got the concept and kind of the structure of how to run around in it, it's like learning a new software program.
Since we are still in NaNoWriMo month, that at the end of NaNoWriMo, if you actually make the 50,000 words, they give you a free month on Scrivener.
Get out.
Yeah, it was the last few years. That's part of the prize they give you a month on Scrivener, because that's how I've been in there before. So maybe look at that.
Well, maybe I need to finish. I got any more words in there.
Get going.
Do you always do NaNoWriMo?
This is the first time I've ever done it. Suzanne's done it. Her last book, didn't you finish it?
Yeah, my book that was just published, it's going to be published next year, was NaNoWriMo book.
Oh, great.
Yeah. But you know, when you come out of NaNoWriMo, Graham, it's a right mess. I mean, it's spaghetti. It really is. But then you spend the real year, you know, getting that spaghetti and making something that you can actually read out of it.
Right.
But at least do an outline. For me, it was perfect. It was like a huge outline, you know?
It is getting me to just get right to the, you know, I know which every scene is going to be. So it's been easy to just sit down and write in the little pieces of time that I have. So very cool. Now, the one other thing I wanted to touch on, you told me about D2D, draft to digital. Can you tell our listeners about that?
Yeah, it's an alternative to Smashwords, which I think most people have heard of. So it's basically a distributor. You go to them, you upload your book. Most authors, including me, find it much easier to get their book onto Draft to Digital than Smashwords, who are famous for being quite fussy.
Yeah.
And then they will distribute it to, right now, only the major players, but those are the ones most of us are interested anyway, right?
Yeah.
So it's Apple and Barnes & Noble and Kobo.
Right. And what you told me to do was to do both Smashwords and D2Ds. Now, I started with D2D, and then Smashwords, you can just deselect the ones that you already have on D2D. So you're covering more, but D2D also gives you a lot more timely reports and stuff too, right? Isn't that true?
Exactly. Yeah. I think D2D is a smoother process. So yeah, exactly as you said, go to the major players through them and then upload onto Smashwords to catch some of the other smaller ones. And of course, Smashwords itself has its own store, which D2D doesn't yet. So it's always useful to be on Smashwords too.
Yeah, yeah. And for Smashwords, I've also taken, they have like coupons that you can make. So at our Facebook party, I offered my book for free. I went on Smashwords and made a free coupon. So I didn't have to do a lot of, you know, like give away on Amazon and it's charging me $3 and I make, you know, whatever off of it. So there's some other useful tools on there as well.
Oh, yeah. Couponing. Love that.
Yeah, yeah. It was really great advice, though. I mean, I appreciate it.
Question about the, because I'm not on D2D. Can you actually track what actually sells through those different channels, or does it all just come up as one sale? I mean, can you?
Yeah, they'll break it down and tell you, which you're selling on each platform. Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's really helpful.
It is good. And it was a lot easier to get up on. When I updated it, I had my draft re-edited and then I put it up everywhere. That was the first place I went because I knew it would not be full of snafus and like, it's very intuitive the way they've set up the site. So it was so much easier just to get everything on there. I was like, shoo, at least I have some of it done. And then it went on to, you know, the other ones and I've just finally got Create Spaces up because that one is a nightmare.
Here's a trick with D2D, which probably is going to get me into trouble. So.
Oh, we like things that are going to get us into trouble.
Do tell.
Nobody repeat this.
Okay.
No, we won't tell anybody.
Remember when Smashwords, you used to have to put that little special copyright notice in the front that identified it as a Smashwords book?
That probably was before my time, but yeah.
So you don't need to do that anymore. So what I found the secret to Smashwords is, and I'm totally going to get in trouble here, is I uploaded to D2D, which was a much simpler process, and then I downloaded the EPUB out of there and just uploaded the EPUB into Smashwords.
Oh my god.
Which they accept so much easier than when you're trying to upload a Word document.
I wish you told me that last month.
I just figured it out.
Oh, it's brilliant. I love that.
Hey, so Graham, you've run a writing group for 10 years. Is that right?
Well, I wouldn't say I run it, but I was one of the founder members, yeah.
Yeah, so tell us what's the secret. I mean, 10 years is a long time for a writing group.
So ours seems to run a little differently than most people I've heard. We meet weekly, whereas most people seem to meet monthly. So we meet nearly every week. Obviously, you know, life gets in the way like it does, but we meet every week and everybody reads normally about 5 to 10 pages, and then we critique it and we just go around everybody. So everyone gets a look in of their latest scene. And I think what makes it work so well for us is that we're so in tune with each other now that we can give really honest and sometimes really painful critique, but we, you know, it never gets personal. We all know each other and we all trust each other.
Yeah.
And it really helps.
That sounds very powerful to get from people that you respect. They're doing it out of love. If this guy thought that whatever criticism, your audience would too. So he's really helping you. That's great.
And how big is the group?
So there's only 5 of us. It grows or shrinks by, you know, 1 or 2 every now and then. But it's 5 of us. And it allows us to say in an evening to get through, you know, a few pages from everybody.
That's amazing. So you have a certain day where you send the pages in, you read through everybody, the other 4 people's pages, and then so you've got to keep track of 4 storylines. But that's kind of fun, you know?
It is kind of fun. We actually do the reading on the day. We don't do it ahead of time.
Oh, okay.
Turn up. And another advantage of that is, as you know, most authors know, when you read your piece aloud, you discover all sorts of flaws you didn't notice.
That is really interesting. So it's not read ahead and then you got to remember what you thought when you read it. This is an instant response.
It's interesting to, you know, you'll be reading your piece and before everyone even gets to critique, you're already spotting the things that don't sound right in your own piece.
I have the computer read my novel back to me for the same reason. Because when you hear it, that's when you hear the bumps and you hear things that aren't sounding right and all that kind of thing. So that's great when you've got a real human voice. I mean, I'm intrigued because of just the way you create, Graham. So what's your writing process? Do you have a particular time that you write? Or
yeah, so that's fascinating, isn't it? Because every author is totally different. I love
it. Totally, that's what we love it. We love asking that question.
I love hearing that from other people. So I try to write at least an hour, preferably 2, 5 days a week. That's my plan. I don't always stick to my plan, and it's always in the evening because I have a day job, so it has to be in the evening.
And do you have a particular time? Do you like wait till after dinner, or you just kind of, how does that work?
Yeah, I usually wait till after dinner. Usually, kind of 8 o'clock-ish. I try to get a couple of hours in. You know, 3 nights in the week, and then weekends I try to do a bit more.
And do you have a process to get you into the writing process? Like some people will stop in the middle of a sentence or something. Do you have some sort of way that you get into your process then?
Not really. I have a pretty good detailed outline. So, you know, usually when I come to my writing, I just will reread the last, you know, page or so. And then I go, oh, yeah, that's what I was. And yeah, and I try not to read too far back and start editing. I don't want to do that. I just want to catch myself up and then I start writing.
That's great. You know, it's interesting, KJ, when we talk to people that are consistent, you know, it's just this consistency that seems really obvious, right? Even though you know, sometimes you don't always get it in, you've made that decision that you're going to try and write at least 1 to 2 hours each evening is what is important. Yeah.
Right. And I think it keeps the story in your head so much that as you get into that habit that you don't have to do a lot of backtracking to figure out where you were because it's right there. It's very inspiring to hear you say you did that 5 days a week. I feel like I need to do something like that. I have a setup of how I do it, but it's not quite as structured because I have kids and there's just too many unknowns that get thrown into every evening or weekend, you know.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, everyone has to, you know, I spent a long time as a writer being guilty about not matching the word counts that other people were doing or not writing 5 hours every day. And I got myself out of that. And I think people shouldn't ever look at other authors and go, oh, I should write like that. That's crazy.
Yeah. No, I mean, I wouldn't mean it like that. It's just more that it's more inspiring to, like, Suzanne has really helped me to set little goals and just be more consistent. And it's really helped me. There's all these things I got to do, podcasts and social media and all that. But, you know, what she does is very first thing in the morning, you write, you get it out of the way. So
it's tricky, though, isn't it?
It is.
It's always challenging. Yeah, I don't know. I've gone through a process lately. Well, I've had to step away from it for a week because I was not getting anywhere with it. And you know, sometimes to go back in and have the enthusiasm, because to me, I always think if it's boring me, then it's going to bore my reader. And if I'm in that space where I'm not enjoying it, then I often step away just for a short period of time to get excited about it again.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I do the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that's really smart. Yeah.
If that's your decision, just stick to that. You know, it's kind of like exercise, isn't it? Let us do that one, though. So, AJ, you should hear Graham. You see, she wears her exercise clothes, that's what she was telling me, and then she doesn't want to waste the outfit.
Right.
I didn't know. That's all I have to do is put on the clothes. Apparently.
Yeah, like today, I got dressed in my workout clothes because if I didn't, then I'd have to change, and that's one more excuse to not actually go to the gym. So I was like, I'm ready to go. All I have to do is put my shoes on.
He's got to work out.
You need to teach me then how to go to the gym more often.
Well, you know what I do at the gym is I edit. I'm not in that part yet because I'm in NaNoWriMo where I'm writing, but I print it off what I wrote the night before. I read through it again, and then I just make edits and like big picture, pull yourself out of the details. Is this where I want to go?
How do you edit while you're on the treadmill? That's what I want to know.
I have a red pen and I have papers.
Are you serious? You actually edit on the treadmill?
I do. And then it's embarrassing when they all fall on the floor and they flip onto the treadmill and you're like kicking them off. It's
you are hysterical.
It's happened.
That's dedication right there.
It is dedication.
It's called proper use of your free time. That I consider free time for my brain.
Peter, I have to admire you because you just find the way. There's no one out there that can say, I can't do it, because KJ finds ways to write all over the place, which is amazing.
That's a fantastic solution to edit.
There you go.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It's not fabulous editing, but you do catch a lot of stuff reading. And you know what I found? That I'm on the treadmill so much longer because I love my book. It's like, oh my God, I can't stop. So it's dual purpose. I work out longer and I get something done. It's a good tip.
Wow, I think that's like a tip. We need to write a book about that, like exercise and writing or something. It needs to be like a bestseller.
You should write that. That's a great book.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a great book. It's hard to write. You can't write while you're exercise, though. Although,
can't take your typewriter with you. That doesn't work.
You could dictate, though. You know, like how you use that, Graham, don't you use Dragon software to talk?
I do.
You could easily do that.
Okay, so completely switching heads here. Do you do a lot with social media, Graham? Do you have any really...
I do less on social media than I used to because I used to spend too much time on it.
Right.
I don't think I have any super tips. I kind of watch what everybody else is doing and try. I've yet to find something that really works for me. A couple of things that have worked for me, and I know it's different for everybody, is giveaways on Goodreads worked for me.
We both did that too, didn't we, KJ?
Yes.
Yeah, they really do. In fact, that's a great tip for people, is the giveaways on Goodreads. And Goodreads is a little challenging to navigate, but once you get in there, it can be a really good tool.
Yeah,
definitely.
Tell us how, you know, what your results were, Graham, and how you did it. Is there a certain thing that you did?
So on Goodreads, I heard from another author that the secret is to offer that paperback to the entire world, not just to limit it to the US, which obviously means you've got to pay more in packaging. Potentially, it depends who wins the giveaway, right? So I did that. I opened up to the entire world. I think I did two winners. I did two. And I got, I think, about 1,500 people added Necromancer to their to-be-read list.
Wow.
Which I was pretty happy with. You know, it's not mind-blowing numbers, but I was pretty happy with that. And I sent one copy to someone in the States and one copy to someone in Romania.
Yeah, but for the price that it cost you to advertise that, you have 1,500 people that have been exposed to your work. That's great advertising.
Well, not even exposed. You have an actual number of that many people that saw it and clicked on it enough to put it in their to-read pile. That's pretty good statistics right there, just for the value of that. But then those people, every time they go into their shelf, it's there. You can see it. All the people that follow them will see it. So it really carries a long way. And they're readers. They're not just some guy who wants to win something.
Well, I hope so, yeah. I mean, that's the way I look at it. And also, by offering it up to the entire world, I hope to think it'll get me more fans outside of the U.S.
Yeah, that's smart. Very smart.
That's amazing. That's really great. So you mainly your fans are in the U.S. then, Graham?
Most, 90% of them in the U.S. Some in the U.K., as you would imagine. I have a bubble of readers in Germany and India.
What?
Bubble. German bubble.
A German bubble.
Because, you German know, we just found out that we're number 72 in Indonesia for comedy, Blondie and the Brit. We have no idea why.
No, I know why. I told you why. I have friends. I have several friends that are in Indonesia, and then one of them has a magazine. From her, there's probably about 15 people that I follow, so they probably have listened to it. I don't know how many shows there are, how many comedy shows there are in Indonesia. There might be 72.
but it's nice to be number 72.
Heck, I mean, yeah. Seriously. Somewhere.
That's great going.
It's random and weird, but heck, I'll take it.
We're having so much fun. We don't care.
Exactly.
What are you working on right now?
So I'm working on a science fiction novel. I'm actually having a lot of fun with it.
Ooh.
It's called Emergence, or at least that's what the title is right now. It may change.
Can you give us a little snapshot of what it's about? Or is it undercover?
So for me, I love a particular type of book where it's like layers of an onion, right? So that's why I wanted to set out and write this one. So the reaction I want out of the reader for this book is that, you know, they get, you know, further away into the book or whatever, and they go, okay, I know what's happening. And then there's a twist, and then they go, oh, okay. No, now I know what the reality is. Now I know what's happening. And there's just layer after layer of these things. And I'm intrigued to see how many people can predict the actual ending.
Oh, that is so cool. I love that.
It's kind of like raising children.
There's another layer.
No, that wasn't what was going on.
I thought he was going in this direction.
I love that. That's my favorite kind of read.
Me too.
No, it's going to be late next year, I think.
Wow.
But it's really fun to write that. That's what I'm doing in Stealing Time, where I'm connecting the books, right? I'm planning things in the second book that seem invisible for the most part. But when you go to the third book, you look back. And I did the same with the first book. I'm weaving things that were in the first book of now are being revealed in the second book. So I know what you're talking about. And it's so much fun to write. And you just, I have my fingers crossed. I'm like, I hope no one guesses. You know, you really want to surprise them.
Yeah, so Graham, so did you really have to outline this well if you've got so many twists and turns?
Yeah, it had a really thorough outline on it. And mainly it was just a question of getting those layers about where people figure out what's happening. And so far with my writers group, who are the test, they're starting to piece together what I want people to piece together. So far, so good.
Good.
Oh, I love it. I can't wait. We should do maybe another program. When that comes out, Graham, maybe you should come back.
I'd love to.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That'd be fun.
I think that's all the questions, Peggy. You want to do the lightning round?
Yeah, you get to do the lightning round, ma'am.
Yeah. You've listened to this, so you know how this works, Graham. So you even know the questions.
He's probably ready.
I have heard everyone.
Right. Okay, you ready then? Here we go.
I think so.
Good. Shoulders back. Okay, tea or coffee?
Coffee if I'm in the US, but in England I'll drink tea.
Now, is that because our coffee's not so great in the UK?
No, it's because my mum just drinks tea all the time.
Your mum.
Aww, your mum. And you live with your mum? No, you mean your mum in England with your husband?
I can't go to England and not visit my mum, can
I? Yeah,
of course. Should not. Mum. Okay, for writing, silence or music?
Silence.
And what did you want to be growing up?
An astronaut or a pilot.
Oh, wow.
You know what that reminds me of?
What?
Suzanne. Who else said astronaut and?
And a stripper.
And a stripper.
Yeah. Oh,
Jerry.
Yeah, that was Jerry. And you know, Jerry's such a great person. It was just such a funny thing from somebody who's quite, you know, like a very industrious kind of person that made us laugh. So
yeah.
That was what she wanted to be. We just never would have imagined that. Mm. Okay, is there a book you could read every year?
Anne McCaffrey's Dragon Riders of Pern books.
I've read a couple of those a long, long time ago.
And what genre is that?
That's fantasy.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. Yeah, I don't know. That sounds really interesting. Okay, dog or cat?
Definitely cat. My six cats would be annoyed if I said
that. Oh, you've got six cats?
I do.
And what's their names?
Now you're going to challenge me, aren't
you? Oh, you have to know.
Morgana, Pippin, Bella, Lilith, and Malachi.
Wow.
Those are some names like the books of the Bible.
Pretty much.
The last one in there. That's funny.
Wow, you actually shout those names at night, do you, when you go outside to pull them in?
They're all in.
Malachi!
Oh my God, Suzanne, you are hilarious.
What author would you most like to have dinner with, dead or alive?
Ooh, I'm going to cheat. I'm going to give three.
Ooh,
Dickens, Hemingway, or H.P. Lovecraft?
Oh, so the first two I know, and the second, third one I didn't know.
And horror.
Ah, that's probably why.
Oh, wow.
Okay, and I think I was Dickens too. Favorite vacation spot?
Don't think I have a favorite. I love traveling everywhere.
Good. Favorite book genre to read?
Fantasy.
Do you write best in the morning or at night?
At night.
Is that because you don't have a choice?
Yeah, I was going to say, if you had a choice, would you write in the morning?
That's a really good question. I've never had the chance to write in the morning, so I don't know.
Wow. If money was no object, where would you live?
Probably on an island in the Caribbean.
Oh. Me and KJ would be right there with you.
Heck yeah.
Okay. Let's do a writer's island.
Hey, there you go.
That's a great idea.
We've got our own little group, and we'll all read five things each week. We know how to do that. Favorite comfort food?
Ice cream.
Ooh, nice. Yeah. What kind?
Yeah. Chocolate chip.
Mint chocolate chip. Yum. Now, you're England, so this should be, you should at least have had a nickname growing up. Everybody had a nickname growing up. Did you have a nickname?
I don't think I had a nickname in England, so no.
Wow, that's unusual.
There goes your theory, Suzanne.
I know. Can you believe that? I think most people do that. So beach or mountain?
Both.
At the same time, you need Hawaii then.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Hawaii would work.
Totally.
I'd be up for that.
Great. That's it. That's all of them.
Yay.
Great.
Thank you so much for joining us on Blondie and the Brit today. Graham, it has been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you very much. It's been fun.
Yes. Please join us next week where we welcome Edward C. Stanton from Just Imagine It, Inc. He is the president and in charge of audiobooks. He gives us the inside scoop and also shares with us some really interesting stories about some of the interviews that he's conducted on his podcast, Get Behind Me, Now Stay There. You can find our show notes and more information about our podcast at blondieandbrit.com. That's BLONDIEANDBRIT.com.